The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, FBI agents raid the Mar-a-Lago home of President Trump.
This has never happened before in the entire history of our country. This is unprecedented.
This may be the most egregious episode fueling distrust, but it is by no means the first.
The whole thing stinks, Hugh, and the American people are fed up with it.
We'll hear from Andrew McCarthy on what the DOJ is trying to do.
The thing they said they wanted to search for is not the thing they're most interested in.
And a look at the Inflation Reduction Act, a bill that should be called the IRS Expansion Act.
87,000 people being hired by the IRS is not good news for you.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. In a week that should have been dominated by yet another massive spending bill that will more than double the size of the IRS, we were met with news that FBI agents raided the Mar-a-Lago home of former President Trump. This has never happened before, a former president being raided. But as with all things Trump, the past is no guide to the present. We'll begin our coverage with Hans von Spakovsky at the Heritage Foundation. He was a guest of Seth Leibson, my colleague on AM 960, The Patriot in Phoenix.
Let's just start with what your first thoughts were when you heard the news about can I call it a raid? I know some people don't like the use of the word raid, but I'm for lack of anything other than what it looks like, raid at Mar-a-Lago. What were your first thoughts?
I was shocked. I mean, shocked. This has never happened before in the entire history of our country. This is unprecedented to execute a criminal search warrant against a former president and to search his home. I was just shocked by this, and I continue to be shocked by it because it just seems way overboard for this to have happened.
The thing that I first thought about, Hans, if I may, was that you would execute a warrant in pursuit of a crime, investigating a crime, and I can't for the life of me think of what criminal activity would require such an aggressive intrusion. I mean, if it's the Presidential Records Act, my goodness gracious, that would be ratcheting up something beyond anything it ever was intended to be. I can't imagine what underlying crime they could possibly be thinking of. Nothing seriously has been alleged against Donald Trump as far as having broken a federal law, is there?
No, I mean, I agree with you. And in fact, no evidence has been produced to date by either the FBI, the Justice Department, or even the January 6th committee indicating that there was any violation of a federal criminal law by the president. If this is about the president supposedly keeping classified information, keep in mind that a Trump official came out, a guy named Kash Patel, who was the principal deputy to the director of the National Intelligence, who said that he was in the White House when the president declassified all of these documents.
Wow.
If that is correct, and that was the basis for the FBI applying for this warrant, then they applied for this warrant on a false basis, the same way they applied for electronic eavesdropping warrants under the FISA law during the whole Trump collusion hoax, under false pretenses.
Interesting. And of course, it's worth reminding the audience that the president, while he is president, has full authority to declassify anything, literally anything that is in his power. He would be the judge
and
jury.
That is exactly right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. So let me ask you generally, you used to be at the Department of Justice. What's your sense of it now? Has it become a highly politicized institution? Is it beyond redemption? There's calls to defund the FBI by some precincts. Give me your overall thought about something we used to all very much revere and respect.
The answer to all that, unfortunately, is yes.
Wow. Okay.
Merrick Garland has weaponized the department to the point where they are using the powers of its law enforcement for political purposes. And just look back at what they did a year ago when the National Board of the National Association of School Boards,
right,
contacted the White House. The White House then talked to Merrick Garland. And what do? They formed a task force to label parents who show up at school board meetings to complain about the propaganda being taught to their students as domestic terrorists. That is partisanship. That is politicalization like we've never seen at the Justice Department. And keep in mind, folks may not realize this, you know, the FBI is actually part of the Justice Department.
Right, that's a good reminder. Yeah.
Up until this past week, I'd been looking at inflation, recession, crime, collapse of public education, our border crisis, the collapse in Afghanistan a year ago, as the key issues impacting November's election. Again, this was up until Monday night this past week. I turned to the good congressman from Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher.
Now add in abuse of power by Team Biden. People are angry, very angry. I also point out the 87,000 new IRS agents, which you will vote against this Friday or Saturday, they can do to every American what the FBI did to former President Trump on Monday night. Am I right about that?
I think you're right. I might put the FBI raid under a broader theme of lack of accountability that really predates what we saw at Mar-a-Lago, right? I think there's a growing sense of unaccountability from the federal government that connects to the fact that nobody seems to have been held accountable for the shameful surrender in Afghanistan. Nobody as yet has been held accountable for signing the letter suggesting that the Hunter Biden laptop was disinformation and thereby abusing in some meaningful sense their post as a former high-level intelligence official. Nobody's been held accountable for the lies and the cover-up about the origins of the coronavirus pandemic and effectively regurgitating Chinese Communist Party propaganda or using American taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous research at Wuhan. Go further back. I mean, the thing that first kind of, I think, altered, if not shattered, part of my epistemological framework about the federal government was when I came into Congress in 2017, I obviously came from a defense and intelligence background. I never would have thought it would have been possible that the highest levels of the FBI could have abused the FISA process, because, of course, my view of the FBI is shaped by buddies I have who I served with in uniform who are rank-and-file FBI agents who are patriots, hardworking, smart guys, and who I think do represent the vast majority of people in the FBI. But clearly there's a problem with leadership. And that, I mean, the way in which the Steele dossier, which was total bogus, was weaponized against the Trump campaign and the Trump administration, that was such a massive breach of trust. I think for a lot of us, that shattered the way we viewed federal law enforcement agencies, and now we sort of see this as connected to that. So I think people are crying out for accountability. And let's face the facts, Hugh. We're going to be in divided government even if there is a red wave come November, right? President Biden's going to veto a lot of conservative legislation. So what can we do? Well, we can use the power of the majority. We can use our subpoena power. We can use the power of investigations and good old-fashioned oversight to start holding some of these agencies and individuals accountable and thereby start ourselves on the path to getting the public to trust the FBI, to trust the intelligence community, again, for there to be a more productive relationship, because I fear that we strayed off that path. And your average American, certainly here in Northeast Wisconsin, is getting disgusted with all this stuff.
You know, Congressman, you are an intel officer. You're on the Intelligence Committee. You're a Marine. 87,000 IRS agents represent half of the standing United States Marine Corps, more than half of the Marine Corps' strength. They just expanded the IRS by more than half of the Marine Corps. it's kind of a stunning thing to do in the middle of a recession when Americans distrust their federal government. And what you just went through, the litany goes back. The first act is the non-prosecution of Hillary Clinton for the destruction of classified information. No search warrant ever. Terms of her interview, her lawyer was present. All of that caused this original rupture. And the Andrew McCabe, Jim Comey, Peter Strzok FBI was supposed to be reformed by Christopher Wray. I thought Wray was a looted clerk and is a very... I think he's been captured by the agency. I think they run circles around him. And the D.C. agency, I would basically wash everyone out of D.C. and bring in the guys and the gals from the field because I just don't trust any of them.
100%. I will say this, Hugh. We are on the intelligence community actively working on an aggressive FISA reform effort, which we will try to tackle in the next Congress. Obviously, it's a very difficult thing. There are disagreements within the party on it, but I think we can strike that balance of still giving certain agencies the powers they need to go after bad guys, which you do need, while demanding greater accountability and transparency and respect for due process and things like that. You mentioned the 87,000 IRS agents. If you go on the Army website, you can check me on this. 90,000 is the size of a field army. So we're basically putting in place a field army's worth of IRS agents. And if you think that's innocuous, well, then you've never been audited. I mean, I was rereading Kimberly Strassel actually had a great book about how called The Intimidation Game about a decade ago, which documented the abuses of power here in Wisconsin, where overzealous prosecutors went after conservatives, did raids in the middle of the night, targeting members of the Club for Growth simply because of their politics. And we got a preview of what's happening right now. In addition to Trump being raided at Mar-a-Lago, a colleague of mine, Scott Perry, allegedly had his phone seized by FBI agents. The whole thing stinks, Hugh, and the American people are fed up with it.
In the Declaration of Independence, there's the glorious language we know. But then Jefferson laid out what is an actual indictment of George III. One of the bill of particulars is they have sent out armies of officials to eat up our wealth. So your friends who are Democrats, I know you got some friends who are Democrats. I was talking to one last night, my college roommate, longtime Democratic friend, saying, you know, Democrats are bent on self-destruct. Elaine Luria cannot win re-election, having cut the defense budget by inflation alone and having 87,000 IRS agents. She got a vote for that this week. Every Democrat in a tough district is being forced to vote on the IRS Expansion Act. Will any of them defect? Will they? Because they did this for Henry Waxman 10 years ago. They voted for his idiotic climate bill then, and now they're going to vote for a climate bill that helps people in our income bracket buy EVs. Do you think they're actually going to do that 9 weeks before an election?
Pelosi seems to be marching them off the cliff right now.
Coming up, we'll try to get an understanding of what the Department of Justice was thinking.
The thing they said they wanted to search for is not the thing they're most interested in.
Andrew McCarthy. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy enters our 25th anniversary year, we've remained committed to a single truth of world history, that ideas have consequences. To understand these ideas and their impact on today's politics, and to test them quantitatively, requires the unique curriculum we offer on our Malibu, California campus. Apply now for fall classes at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The explanation that we heard as to why the DOJ would take such an extraordinary action in the raid of a private residence of a former president was that it was necessary for the retrieval of documents for the National Archives. According to our next guest, Andrew McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor, that simply does not pass the smell test. McCarthy explained in his appearance with my colleague Mark Davis on 660 AM The Answer in Dallas.
So let me explain what I mean by it, what I don't mean by it. I'm not accusing anyone of fraud. What I'm saying is that the crime that they got the search warrant to investigate, you know, in other words, the crime that they went to the court and said, we believe this crime has been committed and that evidence of the crime will be found in the place we want to search, namely mishandling of classified information. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it was fraudulent for them to represent to the court either that that crime may have been committed and there was probable cause to believe there'd be evidence of it at Mar-a-Lago. I'm not saying they were defrauding the court. And prosecutors are not required to tell the court everything they suspect. So if they believed in conducting a lawful search that they would find evidence of a crime that they didn't tell the court about, there's nothing improper about that as long as what they represented to the court was true. So what I mean by pretextual is the crime that they're really interested in is not the crime they got the search warrant to look for. I think they were absolutely confident they would find evidence relating to perhaps mishandling of classified information and more broadly violations of the Presidential Records Act, which, by the way, is like a constant. We didn't have a Presidential Records Act till the Watergate era. Before that, the presidents were the custodians of the records of their own administrations, which is why you see all these presidential libraries that so much funding goes toward.
Right.
So I think they're obviously investigating and trying to pin a January 6th related crime on Trump. So when I say pretextual, I'm not claiming fraud. What I'm saying is the thing they said they wanted to search for is not the thing they're most interested in.
It seems that the FBI and the Department of Justice in this particular case, they had better have the goods for something extremely, extremely serious. They had better have found something. Their gambit better pay off in spades, because otherwise it looks like a raid of this magnitude, this kind of drama, this kind of pyrotechnics, all for some stupid document tug of war with the National Archives. That's not going to look good.
No, it's not. But I think, Mark, that subsequent events have borne me out. One of the, I think, most significant things that's happened, which because of the raid on Trump's place down in Florida hasn't gotten as much attention yet as I think it will, is the fact that hours later, evidently, they served a search warrant on Congressman Mark Perry to take his cell phone. Now, that is clearly related to January 6th. And if you remember from the January 6th committee's extravaganza about remember Justice Department Day, that the soap opera episode that was about the Justice Department, I forget whether that was like 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago. The big thing they covered on that day was this Justice Department lawyer who was in the civil division who Trump worked with on the issue of sending a letter to the states to tell them that the Justice Department suspected fraud. Now, the higher ups at the department would not go along with sending the letter, but that was the big thing that they covered in this particular episode of the January 6th committee. The congressman who introduced that Justice Department lawyer to Trump was Congressman Perry.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that what they're trying to do is build a case that Trump exploited the Justice Department to try to hammer the states into rejecting the election that had been conducted and substituting the vote of the Republican-controlled legislatures for the popular election.
For those who aren't familiar, Congressman Scott Perry, big Freedom Caucus guy, Republican out of Pennsylvania, isn't there torment of him the same mind that they're using with everybody, just dragging everybody through this net that's designed to ensnare somebody for something that looks criminal? The facts are Trump believes he got screwed. Millions of people agree, but let's stay with him for a moment. In that capacity, for him to throw every strategy against the wall, everything, to see what might stick.
So minimally, what do they need to try to make a case on Trump? And I'm not saying this would be a sufficient case, but this at least this is what they need to get them into the ballpark of making a case. They need evidence that Trump absolutely knew that what he was saying was nonsense and that what you just said is not true,
right?
That he didn't actually believe it. So what's the closest thing they have so far to evidence Trump knew it was a hoax, that what he was doing was fraudulent? They would say for now at a certain point when Trump was putting pressure on the Justice Department to do more to investigate fraud, he said to Jeffrey Rosen, who was then the acting attorney general, this was after Barr left, he said, just say it was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman.
Right.
Now, Trump would say about that, I believed it was corrupt, so I was trying to get the Justice Department to simply say what I believe.
Right. Agree with me. Just
Republican congressman would do the heavy lifting.
Right.
What the guys who are investigating the case would say is, no. The Justice Department was telling Trump there was no evidence of fraud. We've been investigating this up and down. We can't find evidence of fraud. And Trump was saying, don't tell me what you found. Just say it was corrupt and leave the rest to me. And that's their interpretation of it.
While at least half the country senses a chill from this unprecedented legal action against the former president, the country is also coming to grips with the latest massive spending proposal named, in Orwellian fashion, the Inflation Reduction Act. It ought to be called the IRS Expansion Act. I turn to South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
We had to go round and round. It actually goes back to the president's own introduction of his original $7 trillion ambition, where they said they would double the size. So it's not made up. You guys aren't making this up for talking point. They really are going to double the size of the IRS and hire 87,000 new people. How do they think they're going to do in the election on that?
Well, I think it's going to backfire. I think higher gas prices is going to be a result of a war on American fossil fuels, a new gas tax on a imported oil and American crude refined in America will drive up gas prices. But there's a lot of efforts to take off the table exploration credits, $45 billion in new taxes on American energy companies. But back to the IRS, it's bigger than the British Army. There are 81,000 people in the British Army. There's going to be 87,000 new agents at the IRS over a 10-year period. 87,000 people being hired by the IRS is not good news for you. 53% of the people working for the IRS today are still working from home. So how do we fight this? It's a 10-year build-out, right?
Yep.
So if we take back the House and the Senate in November, which I think we could, we should not pass any appropriation bill to fund the government that authorizes this expansion. I'm going to introduce legislation to roll this back.
Coming up.
Essentially, right now, we have given the IRS effectively an unlimited budget.
More on the IRS Expansion Act when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The IRS provisions in what I've labeled the IRS Expansion Act may be the stuff that contributes most significantly to instilling fear in the American people. But the doubling of the IRS is just one piece of this package. Economist Stephen Moore joined my colleague, Charlie Kirk.
What bothers me so much about this, Steve, and what worries me is how brilliantly duplicitous the climate change agenda is, because there is no end goal, right? They will always say, well, we just need another $100 trillion or another $250 trillion. It's never really about the climate. It's actually about control. And so that's one component of it. Can you talk about the tax increases in this bill as well?
There's four industries that get clobbered, just absolutely clobbered in this bill. The coal industry. Gee, thanks a lot, Joe Manchin.
Yep.
You just betrayed. You're not one of your biggest industries.
And Tester, too. John, I mean, there's a massive coal industry in Montana. What is he doing?
Good point.
Butte, Montana.
Good point.
Anyway,
so
go ahead. Yeah.
Coal, steel.
Okay. Well,
you know, I thought we wanted a domestic steel industry. And according to the statistics, steel gets creamed.
So, wait. So Sherrod Brown and the other guy from Pennsylvania, they voted against.
That's Casey.
Yeah, Casey, whose father was governor or something.
Yeah.
They voted against the steel industry? How is that possible?
Yeah, it's like if you had the Idaho senators voting against potatoes, you know,
yeah,
how stupid is that?
That's exactly
or
right.
The Nebraska senators voting against corn.
Yep.
I mean, these are key industries in their state. So I mentioned steel, coal, manufacturers. Gee, I thought we wanted to make things here in America. I thought we wanted to bring our manufacturing industry back. That's what we did under Donald Trump, Charlie. You know that. I helped put together that tax plan that Trump did, which worked brilliantly. We brought all these jobs back, and now we're going to start exporting them. And the other industry is our drug industry that makes these important drugs. And so, you know, I don't get the logic of it. It's basically a transfer of money to our most productive industries to one of our least productive industries.
Yeah. And so the one in particular, so how does it actually tax steel and coal? Is it explicit in the bill?
Well, this is a little complicated because they've made some changes to the bill in the Senate. And we're still trying to figure out exactly what they did. But what the corporate minimum tax does is it affects capital intensive companies that have machinery and equipment and computers and factories. They don't get to write those off anymore. And so they get really hammered. And so what they're going to do is take those factories out of the United States, and they're going to put them in Mexico and China and India and other countries, and the jobs will go with them. So that's essentially a short version of how this so negatively affects American industries. If you believe in made in America, you got to hate this bill.
So, and then, of course, the one that's getting all the headlines, and I think actually rightfully so. I don't think people are missing the most dangerous component to this. 87,000 new IRS agents, Steve. Have we ever seen such a dramatic increase in the IRS with one bill at any time in our nation's history?
One of the most outrageous things about this is, Charlie, I'm sure you've covered this story, but about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Army said there are about 30 or 40,000 recruits short of what we need for armed services.
That's right.
Our soldiers to keep us safe. We're also about 5,000 to 10,000 short in terms of border security agents. Wouldn't you think that those are higher priorities than hiring 87,000 new IRS agents? I mean, don't you think securing the national security of our country and securing our border should be a higher priority than putting more money into the IRS?
The left has become heavily financed by corporate America, more so the Chamber of Commerce and all of this. Why are they not stepping up to block this bill? Or are they okay with it because they think they're going to be exempt from this?
Charlotte, let me make something clear, though. They're not going to go after big corporations.
No, that's exactly right. You're right.
They're not going to go after Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Zuckerman, or billionaires. If you're a millionaire or billionaire, you have an army of tax accountants and tax attorneys that are going to protect you from the IRS. The people are going to get killed are people like you and me. Number one, we're conservatives.
Yeah, we'll
right?
get audited
so
for sure.
They're going to go after us. And second of all, you know, I don't know about you. I don't have the money to spend $75,000 or $100,000 to hire these IRS.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, the tax attorneys. And that's what they say. I had a tax problem a few years ago. I had a tax lien of $40,000. We didn't believe that we owed the money. And I talked to the tax attorney and he said, you're right. You don't owe the money. But he said, Steve, you probably should just pay the money because it's going to cost you more to defend yourself. Well, we did take it to court. We won. And the IRS said, oops, yeah, we made a mistake. But they think that they're going to intimidate people.
Yeah, but then they don't pay you back for your legal fees.
No, not at all. No, absolutely not.
So you get to defend yourself $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, all those sleepless nights and that misery. The IRS still gets paid. They get all their salaries.
Essentially right now, Charlie, we have given the IRS effectively an unlimited budget.
Coming up, concerns about the FBI and the actions we saw unfold in the past week.
This is a danger to the country. We're going to suffer for it.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. When the news broke about the FBI's raid on the Mar-a-Lago home of Donald Trump, the question immediately came up, what was in the warrant. Neal Katyal, the acting Solicitor General under former President Obama, called on Trump to release the warrant himself. In my column in the Washington Post this week, I made a similar argument. But the defensive reactions we're seeing among the blue check media and Democratic leaders, well, that's an implicit recognition that Merrick Garland and the entire FBI have overreached in their efforts to get Trump. Kevin Brock is a former FBI agent. He joined Dan Prof and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer in Chicago.
What do you think about the solicitor, former Solicitor General's call on Trump to release the warrant and if there's nothing to see here?
That's a little bit disingenuous. I think what you're hearing
especially
from guys
for, especially
like him,
for a former Solicitor General and officer of the court. But anyway, go ahead.
Who should know better? Exactly. But to your point, and I think what we're hearing from the Democrats is a little bit of panic, you know, a fallback on the rubrics of, you know, the equal justice under the law, nobody's above the law, platitudes that are consoling and fundamentally true. However, what this action has unleashed, frankly, is probably the reelection of Donald Trump as the next president of the United States, because it has a dimension more than just a law enforcement action of a search for some documents. It has become a political statement, basically a declaration of war between two political parties, one of which controls the Justice Department and has used the Justice Department to basically try to take an adversary off the chessboard because they know the adversary is powerful. That's what this was about. Nobody's fooled by this. American people see through it. The Democrats know what it's about. That's why they're falling back on their, you know, their statements of, you know, nobody's above the law. Well, it's an arcane, obscure federal statute that's rarely prosecuted or enforced. We've seen that in the past with other people. So it doesn't pass the smile test. Even Politico said it. And there better be a pulverizing amount of evidence against the president, or this is going to backfire.
Yeah, going back to what you said about how political this appears to be, almost immediately after the raid, Mark Elias, who was infamous for some people have forgotten, they don't have their scorecard right from, he's the Perkins Coie lawyer, he's dossier boy, tweeting out immediately, this could result in prohibiting President Trump from running for reelection because that's one of the associated penalties that's possible. Now, that's of dubious right constitutionality. Jonathan Turley and others have argued about whether Congress can proscribe statutorily beyond what's included in the Constitution without amending the Constitution.
Yeah, so another indication of a possible colossal miscalculation here. If the powers that be who thought this was a good idea determined that, hey, we can get him charged on an obscure federal statute that will, because there's language in the statute, that will prohibit him from running for office in the future, then we've just eliminated the major Republican adversary going forward. That's not going to work. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I think everybody agrees that if that was their motivation, if that was their strategy, then they deserve every bit of backfire that this is going to generate.
Yeah, and it sounds very akin to General Michael Flynn and the Logan Act, doesn't it?
You know, that thought occurred to me the other day as well. Similar, you know, where you're plucking out federal statutes that are on the books. Look, you can find a federal statute to fit almost anything. If you look hard enough, you know, the rule of law in this country also includes fair play and fair application of justice and prudent decisions as to where you marshal resources and leverage the immense powers of the Justice Department and against whom you're doing that, because there are ramifications for doing so. And an investigation over a bunch of disputed documents is not enough in the prudential judgment of the Justice Department, one would hope, to counter the political firestorm that's going to follow on the heels of that. It's not good for the nation. And so why pursue something just on because you're taking a stance, well, nobody's above the law? No, this is a danger to the country. We're going to suffer for it.
I think part of this is you make the case or explain what the FBI does that is a value add over what local or state or other federal law enforcement does, which is, you know, why the agency should continue to exist, but perhaps in a reformed capacity.
This is a question that I've been answering, as you point out, for since the Comey-McCabe Russia collusion made-up investigation, and I completely understand the concerns of half of America, at least now, maybe more, that the FBI is just allowing itself to be used in political vendetta investigations. It's becoming harder to defend, I'll admit it. If there's any comfort I can offer is that the agents that are currently in the FBI, certainly the retired agent community, is almost unanimous in the fact that they're aghast at what has taken place over the last couple of days and are deeply disappointed that the FBI has allowed itself to be involved in something like this. Dan, I mean, Louis Freeh would have told the Attorney General to go jump off a cliff if they ever came to the FBI with an idea to do what took place this week. And rightly so, because he would have understood that the political fallout, the damage to the trust in the FBI that would occur far outweighs any Italy indictment and conviction over disputed documents that would be netted. The fact that wasn't taken into the calculus is disturbing to a lot of current and former agents, and it's disappointing. I would argue, I still maintain, that it would be a little bit of a fool's errand to try to disband or dismantle the FBI. We're hearing that call more and more because of the residual value of the FBI to gain the cooperation of individuals in order to fight crime, to get sources, and to build upon the legacy that has been created. It's in peril now. I admit it. I do agree that reforms are the FBI is going to feel the power of reforms over the next few years because of this.
Coming up,
half this country believes that the FBI is a weapon of mass destruction used by the left to suppress its opponents. I am in that half.
Dennis Prager, in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with it.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, the FBI conducts a raid on the Mar-a-Lago home of Donald Trump.
This is a federal government, and not necessarily Republican or Democrat. This is a bureaucracy that is out of control.
We'll get analysis from Albert Mohler.
The reality is what we're looking at here is something that, if not unprecedented, is close in American history.
We'll look at the wildly misnamed Inflation Reduction Act.
It will double the size of the Internal Revenue Service.
And after the release of the Dobbs decision, abortion advocates stoop to outright lies.
They're simply trying to cause fear and to scare people into not supporting pro-life laws.
We have all this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As we look at events from the past week, it was yet another serious blow to the FBI's credibility. I've expressed concern that FBI Director Christopher Wray, hired by Donald Trump to clean up the FBI, seems instead to have been captured by it. The erosion of trust in the public, at least the center-right portion of it, is palpable. It's not good for the country. We'll close with a few comments from my friend Dennis Prager.
Half this country believes that the FBI is a weapon of mass destruction used by the left to suppress its opponents. I am in that half with great sadness. It brings me no joy to tell you that the American Medical Association has been rendered a farce, that the American Bar Association has, that the National Education Association has, that the FBI and CIA have. Why did the FBI raid Mar-a-Lago? When you use the power of the state, which is, by the way, unlimited, when you use the power of the state to suppress political dissent and enemies, then you have become a police state. We are on our way to that. You are a nothing. The state is everything. California, Illinois, and New York have declared states of emergency. The right of to declare state of emergency must be rescinded. It is so abused by the left as to be a much greater nemesis than blessing in a society, the ability of the state to declare a state of emergency. It has been raped, like everything else that is worthwhile in society, by the left. The motto of the left, what is the great line from the devil in Goethe's Faust, which Karl Marx loved? Everything that exists must be destroyed. I believe that that is the line. I have come to see leftism as a diabolical creation because it is completely destructive. There is no redeeming feature to leftism, from Lenin to Soros. And it is not rational. Its entire purpose is to destroy what is good, the nuclear family, justice, standards. It is hard to explain the left, Klaus Schwab and George Soros and AOC. It is hard to explain these nihilist creatures in any rational way, because nothing they say makes sense. It's not a matter of differing. I differ with people on capital punishment, but I don't believe that people who oppose capital punishment are diabolic. It's not a matter of I disagree with the left. It is that they are completely destructive.
Thank you for joining us today. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. If you haven't signed up for our podcast yet, please do so today. And why not give us a nice 5-star review? Go to townhallreview.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schumann, producers David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, Jacob Orduña, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.